Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
I'm your host, Mark Levin, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Just a few days before Christmas and Hanukkah, actually. And in fact, this is the first of my last four shows with you in calendar year 2016 and for a while, actually. I will be on the air today and tomorrow and Wednesday. So 3 days in a row, and I really hope you'll call in at 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Then I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and the beginning of Hanukkah. Then I come back for one day only. That's next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, and that'll be it for 2016. Then I go off to Richmond to serve as a delegate for the Virginia House of Delegates and the Virginia General Assembly, and then I won't be back until sometime in the spring, either March or April. We haven't quite figured that out yet. So I got a lot to say and only a few days to say it, and I know you do too. If you, like me, are still trying to get over and move on and find the right way to resist the scary occurrence of 11/8. That's what I'm calling it now, 11/8. Because like 9/11, 11/8 was a threat to our democracy. And not only because the biggest loser in American history is going to become president-elect. Well, he is president-elect. The Electoral College votes today. I assume they voted for him today, and that will make him officially president-elect. I call him the biggest loser because no candidate in American history has ever lost by so much and still taken power. There have been other examples where the people solidly rejected a president and he still became president. The most recent one coming to mind, of course, is George W. Bush, who lost by 500,000 votes to Al Gore. But Donald Trump lost to Hillary Clinton by almost 3 million votes. He got less than 46% of the vote. She got more than 48% of the vote. Just to give you a little bit of way to understand it, people often consider the Obama-Romney election in 2012 to have been a landslide. Obama won by 5 million votes and 4%. Hillary won by 3 million votes and 2%. Her margin of victory is greater not only than Gore's over Bush, but greater than Kennedy's over Nixon, greater than Nixon's over Humphreys, greater than Carter's over Ford's. Substantially greater, actually. But we all know it's the Electoral College that counts. We all know that this anachronism designed in the Constitution to protect slave owners is still protecting racists and bigots today. How do you like that? Still protecting the man who used racism and bigotry to come to office, Donald Trump. I've been thinking about a lot of things. Frankly, I didn't sleep much at all last night. Been having some long discussions on Facebook that I probably will live to regret just because they mostly go nowhere. Either I'm talking with people who appreciate what I have to say, who agree with me already and are glad to have facts to share with their friends, and that's most of them, or I get some ordinary person who is fact-proof, who's living in the post-truth environment. And it's these people who've made me, I got to say, and I'm a pretty optimistic fella. When you see me on Fox News like I was on yesterday, I'm usually smiling. But it's had me on the verge of despair. This is our therapy session here. I'll be a little honest with you. I'm wondering if nice guys really do finish last. Many of you know that the Charleston killer, and I try to make a point never to say the names of these killers, because I think that they are unimportant and their victims are important. But we all know the racist who entered a black church in Charleston, South Carolina, sat down for over an hour and prayed with the 9 African-American men and women who took this young white boy into their house of worship. They didn't ask questions. They didn't say, "Why are you here?" They didn't challenge him that he wasn't a member or suggest to him that he didn't belong there because he'd never been there before or because he, well, let's face it, wasn't a member of the church. He wasn't black either. And the vast majority of the members of that historically African-American church were African-American. No, they welcomed him at really an historic black church in South Carolina, the church that had been there for, well, quite a long period of time. Mother Emmanuel, it was called. But Mother Emmanuel, this beautiful name, did not protect the 9 innocent people who were gunned down by this awful, terrible person. They took him in. They were kind to him. They prayed with him. They welcomed the stranger. They did everything you're supposed to do in Christianity and Judaism and Islam and any religion of good faith, Buddhism, Hinduism, atheists with good faith. They acted humanely and wonderfully to this man, and he returned their kindness with evil, with death and destruction. I found I've had a bad habit recently, in my confession, a habit of saying that anyone who commits mass murder, who does evil acts, is mentally ill. And really, that's unfair. Full confession, it's unfair to the mentally ill. Yesterday, I was on Fox News, and I talked about a person I called a mentally ill young man who believed the fake news that Hillary Clinton was running some kind of child sex ring in the basement of a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. He came in with his gun, shot up the place, and found, guess what? No basement. And certainly no children, no sex crimes, no Hillary Clinton. I called him mentally ill. Let's face it. I called him that. It wasn't the decision I made in advance. I didn't know this was going to come up. It came up in the course of a discussion. You can watch it all, by the way, on Facebook.com or on my website, MarkLevineTalk.com. But I guess I called him mentally ill because I don't want to think that a sane person would believe such incredible nonsense and commit such an act. I don't want to believe that any sane person could believe that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex ring out of the basement of a DC pizza parlor, or anywhere for that matter. I don't want to believe that our national security advisor was going to be a man who spread these lies about Hillary Clinton and the child sex ring, who I think she should sue for defamation, frankly. At least the people who own Comet Ping Pong in D.C. should sue him for defamation. His actions led to this man shooting up their place. I called him mentally ill as a way of distance, and I shouldn't do that. I don't know that he was mentally ill, not in a classical sense. And I also know the vast majority of mentally ill people don't do violent damage. They just need our help. And I work hard to bring funding to mentally ill people. So I got to watch saying that. Apparently, just because you believe the lies that Donald Trump spreads, no matter how ridiculous they are, doesn't mean you're crazy. What are you? Well, you know, we're not supposed to call people stupid, ignorant, uninformed. There are lots of words to use. But I don't know that he was crazy. And the killer in Charleston, South Carolina, the mass murderer, was he crazy? Well, I don't think so. Not in the classical sense. The law tells you can say someone is mentally ill and, in fact, not guilty by reason of mental illness if they can't tell the difference between right and wrong. That's the legal concept, and it makes sense. If you are schizophrenic and you are believing that you are shooting a gun in self-defense, well, you shouldn't be having a gun in the first place. It's one of the other things I'm working on. But you think that this baby in a crib is actually a monster coming to kill you, and you shoot and you kill the baby, and you really don't understand that it's a child. Well, you can be found not guilty by reason of insanity. You're still locked up in a place for the criminally insane, but you don't go to jail. I can't say that about the Charleston killer. He plotted in advance. He practiced his shots. He clearly had a history of hating African Americans. He spoke to his friends about it. No, I guess in the classical sense, this man isn't mentally ill either. He isn't crazy. And yet, how am I, a human being with a heart, how am I able to understand the enormity of what this young man did? It wasn't just that he was a racist, nasty human being. He was specifically cruel to the people who had done him kindness. That takes a special, special level of hell to describe that kind of evil. And that's the word I guess I have to use, is evil. Not mentally ill. Mentally ill is a distance. It's a safety mechanism. It's something I say to protect me from my thoughts that there are really people that evil in America. I have to say, I felt some of that, not quite as much revulsion. It's hard to be more repelled than what happened in Charleston. But with significant revulsion, I felt that way about people who are unwilling or unable to know the difference between truth and lies. Because one of the great ways, and great I don't mean by good, I mean by powerful ways in which dictators take over countries, is they use the fog of war. They use the fog of lies. They use the fog of projection, calling upon your opponent things that you are in fact doing yourself. If you have not read George Orwell's 1984, please read the book. Written in 1948, ostensibly about the Soviet Union, the same country, Russia, whose dictator installed our president for us, tricked enough Americans into believing lies that they're actually going to have their puppet in the White House. It all brought up to me this question. And it's one I want to explore over this hour. Do nice guys finish last? Did President Obama, who improved this economy from something that could have been worse than the Great Depression, to a pretty good, if not perfect, economy in 8 years, despite being set back every step of the way by Republicans, who now claim victory based on the very people that they insisted on harming? Do nice guys finish last? Do Democrats play too nice? Does meanness always win? Do lies always win? Does failure to have integrity, the way the Republican Party has shown over the past 8 years, always win? It sure looks like it. And it causes me some despair. What do you think? 888-48-MARK, 888-486-2275. We'll be right back after this.
schooling the GOP, one hand tied behind his back, the Constitution in the other. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Kind of wondering if nice guys finish last. I don't mean to give you such despair, and I will try very hard to end on a message of hope. I think Michelle Obama is right. Without hope, we have nothing. But I look at the past 8 years. I look at the fact that when Barack Obama became president, we were losing hundreds of thousands of jobs a month, up to 700,000 jobs a month. Unemployment was on its way to close to 10%. Inflation was higher than it is now. The debt, George Bush had authorized $1 trillion in debt, in deficit, I should say, in deficit. It was hard times. And President Obama got zero help from the Republican Party. He had to push his way through, frankly, getting every one of 60 Democrats to overturn the filibuster to push through the stimulus package that saved the economy. He had to get his Federal Reserve in there to help stimulate the economy, too. He had to save the auto industry. Does nobody remember? Hello, Midwest, that Barack Obama and the Democrats saved the auto industry? And now with unemployment at 4.5%, with inflation close to 1%, with the deficit more than halved, with the highest wage increases in the last 50 years, all while Republicans did their best to gridlock the government, to ruin the Affordable Care Act, to not let it work, to make, and in fact, the people suffering the worst and complaining the most are in those states where they don't even realize, states like Virginia, that Republicans would not allow it to work, where a right-wing Supreme Court made up stuff in the Constitution purposely to try to make the Affordable Care Act fail when they're not supposed to deal policy. They're supposed to talk about the law. And yet, despite all of this, we're doing pretty well. Not perfectly, but doing pretty well. Republicans are trying to kill unions. They're trying to lower wages. They're trying to offshore more jobs abroad. I mean, President Obama gave us 100,000 jobs a month, 400,000 jobs at some points, got zero credit. Donald Trump keeps a few hundred, pays millions for it, and gets all the credit. Do nice guys finish last? Help me out. 888-488-MARK.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. And I don't know, maybe I need cheering up. Maybe I need to know that the universe is a moral place. Maybe I need to know that nice guys win. Because if I just look at it with a Machiavellian eye, just look at it cynically, I'd have to say that the very best strategy for a political party is to, when the other side has the presidency, to work hard to destroy the country. Because that's exactly what the Republicans did. And to be fair, it's what they said they were going to do. Mitch McConnell said, when asked what his main plan was, he was backtracking on the Republicans who used to support immigration reform, backtracking on the Republicans who used to support the Romney Care, which became Obamacare, backtracking on the Republicans who used to support a carbon tax, even backtracking on Republican plans to reduce taxes, which you think Republicans always want to do. He said, no, my goal is to make sure Barack Obama's a one-term president. And he was going to do everything he could to make sure that happens. Shut the government down, cut off all his judges, filibuster everything. He was going to turn the government into gridlock. And the way our system works, rightly or wrongly, we don't have a parliamentary system. We have a system where it's really hard to get stuff passed. It is. You got to get the House, and you got to get the majority party in the House, which sets the rules to get it through the House. And then you got to have the Senate, and then you need 60 to get past the filibuster, and then you also need the president involved, and you got to get it through committees to even get it to the House or the Senate. And Congress doesn't meet that often, and they tend to meet, when I was there and the Republicans were in control, Tuesday clear to Thursday. Yeah, Republicans don't work very hard, and there's a reason they don't. Democrats believe that public policy can succeed. We believe that the public should look out for each other. We believe that our communities should help one another. We believe that there should be public roads and public schools and public universities and public parks. We believe that if you're sick or disabled, it's not usually your fault. That if you're a woman who's just given birth to a child, you shouldn't have to go to work the next day. We look out for people. That's who we are. Republicans believe in destroying public policy. They will tell you, as Grover Norquist says, they want the government to be so small it can be drowned in a bathtub. They don't want the public to do anything. They believe that government cannot succeed, and they've been elected to make sure the government cannot succeed. You know, let's say you're trying to decide which mechanic to hire for your car. You can pick the one who's trained in fixing your specific make and model and got 30 years of doing it and, you know, may not fix it perfectly, but certainly is going in there trying to fix it. Or you can invite the guy that says cars can't work. Cars can't work, and I'm going to prove to you cars can't work. And you give him your car. And he puts a bomb in, and he blows up the car, and he says, see, I told you, cars can't work. You can't blame him. He told you he was going to blow up your car. We can blame you for giving him your car. So for 8 years, President Obama tried to get the car out of the ditch. Republicans tried to put the car in the ditch. He tried to get it on the road. They tried to drive it off the cliff. They both had their hands on the steering wheel, largely gridlocked, but President Obama, through executive orders and through the Democrats that were in charge in the first 2 years, managed after all and through the Federal Reserve and appointments to get us a damn good economy, highest stock market ever, lowest unemployment rate and inflation rate combined, what Ronald Reagan used to call the misery index, in decades. Best reduction of the deficit since that last Democratic president, Bill Clinton. And don't give me this Democrats build up the deficit. That is a lie. That is a lie. Stop believing the lies. Please stop believing the lies. Look it up. And you'll see Obama decreased the deficit. George Bush increased the deficit. George Bush Sr. increased the deficit. Ronald Reagan increased the deficit. Bill Clinton reduced the deficit, brought us the only surplus in the last several decades. Democrats are fiscal conservatives, folks. If you're a fiscal conservative, you should be a Democrat. Republicans will spend money, and they won't spend it helping you. They'll spend it on their rich donors, the lobbyists who put you in power. And if you thought Donald Trump was not going to be that kind of Republican, well, you got to give him credit. He conned you good. We tried to warn you that that's what he does. He's a con. But no, you believed he was going to make everything fine. He's going to bring all the coal jobs back. Ha! Anyone want to make a bet on that? He was going to end automation. Let you keep your job at the, I don't know, maybe the one you have where you put the cords in the telephone like they did back in the 50s. You know, with the switchboard? Okay, you get the idea. I mean, these jobs are gone. There were people who complained about the damn horseless carriage because the village blacksmith was losing his job. He used to make horseshoes, and there was great art and skill in making the right kind of horseshoe. And you had to do it in a way that didn't hurt the horse, but allowed him to go fast and allowed him to step on all kinds of pebbles. And there was a real art form, and I am not at all knocking the craft of horseshoe making. And no doubt a few people still do it today. But I think we have many fewer people making horseshoes today than we did before that damn horseless carriage took all those horseshoe jobs. And there are a lot of rural Americans that don't want to learn a new craft. Those of us who live in urban areas understand we can't have a job for 50 years in a row anymore. We've got to change jobs. That's the nature of the modern economy. We accept that, we learn skills, and we move on. But let me get back to this nice guy's finishing last, and I'm going to cover all these topics over the next couple days. There'll be plenty of time for you to call in. But Donald Trump isn't going to give any of his promises, right? I mean, he'll poison the water and the air, like I guess he promised. But he's not going to give you high wages. He's not going to bring back jobs, right? He had to pay carriers $7 million to get a few hundred jobs. Where Barack Obama is bringing back hundreds of thousands of jobs every month, and Donald Trump has to pay millions just to get a few hundred? Are you kidding me? But you see how it works. Republicans destroy the nation's economy, and then, and only then, the American people are like, okay, I guess we need the Democrats. They know how to run an economy. They put us in, we fix the economy, and then the Republicans throw every bit of gridlock. And then, and this is the part that really angers me, really frustrates me. I talk to people, and I don't mean progressives. I don't even mean conservatives. I mean the low-information voters who often are the swing voters. And they say, look, government didn't work. We had to throw the bums out. The establishment messed up. Huh? What establishment? I think President Obama did a damn good job. Not perfect. If we had Republicans helping us, we could have made the Affordable Care Act better. But let me tell you something. If one person is trying to build a house, and another person is trying to burn a house, it's a lot easier to burn than to build. A builder has to put every nail, every piece of wood exactly in the right place and balance it and check out the weights and make sure that it's symmetrical, make sure it can hold the weight. The arsonist just needs a match and maybe some gasoline. Can act in the middle of the night. Can destroy months and years of painstaking work in an evening. It's easier to burn than to build. And so while the Democratic Party is trying to build and the Republican Party is trying to burn and we reach gridlock and the American people say, well, it's not working, we're not doing anything, rather than throwing the bums in Congress out who are causing this gridlock, they throw out the Democratic Party that's actually trying to build. So now, sadly, America will burn. We're headed for very, very difficult times. And some may see it. I mean, it took the Great Depression to cause Americans to turn to the Democrats the first time in the 30s. It took what would have been the Great Depression to have them turn to Democrats again 8 years ago. Interesting that even a conservative economist by the name of Robert Samuelson has said that the first year, 2008, of the Bush recession was worse than the first year of the Great Depression, 1929, and only because of the really hard work President Obama did were we able to get out of it. But we could have been worse than the Great Depression. Thank you, Obama. Way to go, Obama. Do nice guys always finish last? Is the best way to win a political election to simply blow the place up? If they're going to burn the place down, if we blow it up, Then they'll throw those bums out, right? Of course, I don't really believe that because I'm a Democrat. I want to make it work. I want to make public policy work. I want to make the ordinary American better off. I want to have a society where we all work together. but it's easier to burn than to build. And we don't get any credit for building, and they get all the credit for burning. So, yeah, it leads to some despair. Let's go to Mark in Massachusetts on line two. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, Mark, you doing well? I listen to your show a lot. First time actually calling in.
Thanks for calling.
I think a lot about what you're saying is true, because it's been so statistically that people more often than not mistake what we perceive as power. But when you actually look at what the person is actually doing, it's them showing psychotic traits. I mean, you got the typical psychotic who is like very charismatic, very forceful, very strongly self-opinionated, saying I'm the best guy around, I'm awesome, I'm cool, and they convince others of their delusion. And people mistake these grandiose
megalomaniacs
behaviors.
Right.
And, well, he must know what he's doing if he's like that sure of himself, or he's the guy who you can get a beer with, that sort of thing, They just don't.
We're gonna make America great again. You're gonna win so much you'll get tired of winning. We're gonna bring jobs back. I'm going to give everyone seven, but you know what? I can beat Donald Trump. You like me, I'll give everyone $7 trillion. Each of you will have the entire planet to yourselves if you want it. You will own the world. You will rule the world.
I will give you flying unicorns
to take you from place to place.
Another president who you might also, approve of, and that would be Teddy Roosevelt, the progenitor of, Franklin Delano, being the fact that they were in the same family. And the irony of the fact that I would consider Teddy Roosevelt to be one of the best presidents in the history of our country, and I'm a progressive myself.
Well, he was a progressive. Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. It's a very, very different
Republican
Party. Right.
And the Republican Party of his day were what the progressives were today.
Well, that's right. He even called it the Progressive Party when he ran in 1912.
But they believed in the idea that you would protect the working man, you'd protect the middle class, and by doing so, you would protect the wealthy as well. And Teddy Roosevelt was the epitome of what I would think a Republican should really represent. Walk softly and carry a big stick, rather than the other way around, where you talk loudly and you're just a jerk,
But here's the problem. Here's my question.
Not having any real plan for...
I completely agree with you.
Implementing what you're saying you're going to do.
Right. So, Mark, let me ask you this, Mark, because I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's a shame, but I can't deny the truth of it, that charisma matters. And let's face it, Bill Clinton has and had tremendous charisma. Barack Obama has and had tremendous charisma. Hillary Clinton, I think, was actually smarter than either one of them. I know that she did better than Bill at Yale Law School because he got third in the class and she got first. I learned that from my professors when I was there. She was even more detailed, and I've worked with her. She's very, very detailed. She would have been an excellent president, but she did lack one trait that Bill and Barack had. She didn't have charisma. She's more of an introvert, frankly, than an extrovert. And I'm scared by the power of charisma. I mean, Adolf Hitler had charisma. Mussolini had charisma. A lot of these, Huey Long, Joe McCarthy even, had a certain kind of charisma. And are we really that simple?
Like that old song, it's the cult of personality.
Yeah.
It says, I'm every person that you want to be. Because these people who have this charisma convince you that you should be what they say that you should be, and you've bought into it until it's too late to realize, oh geez, now I'm in trouble.
And I could give you 100 examples of cults. Look at Jim Jones,
by the priest in World War II, said, they came for the for the trade unionists. I wasn't a trade unionist, so I didn't speak up.
Pastor
they came
Mark,
for the homosexuals. I wasn't a homosexual, so I didn't speak up. They came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me.
That's right. That's Pastor Martin Niemöller.
Yay, he's going to make America great again.
So let me ask you this, Mark, and then I got to take a break. Jim Jones, very famous charismatic man, literally got people to drink the Kool-Aid. That's where the expression came from, the Kool-Aid that killed them. He put poison in the Kool-Aid. How do you get people to escape the cult? How much bad does Donald Trump have to do to this country before they realize that they've been had, that they've been conned? How much do people have to lose, or won't they... Oh, I voted for him, therefore I was right. Won't they double down and, give him their house and give them their, their kids and let him destroy even more because they care more about being right than about actually protecting their family? How long does it go?
2020, how many of them still support him, you know? We'll be at a point throughout saying, look, 4 years later, and he's destroyed the economy, but you still support the guy. Hey, you know, you obviously are not, you know, you're not down with the American ideal of what a true Republican should be.
I'll tell you
now,
that.
I just find it really funny that I'm a staunch Democrat, but 100 years ago you'd call me a Republican.
Sure.
That's what I would be, you know.
I understand. Mark, it only takes 1% to change. We forget that. If 1% had changed in across the nation, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Florida, all would have gone for Hillary. We would have talked about the Hillary landslide. So it doesn't take much. I'm just in despair for the people who can't tell the difference between the truth and falseness. I appreciate your call. We'll get to other calls after the break. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just a few minutes left, and I want to get to as many callers as I can. Helen Ithaca on line one's been holding a very long time. Go ahead, Helen.
Oh, hi. I originally was calling about the Electoral College, but you were talking about nice guys finishing last.
Well, I can answer your question on Electoral College, because I saw that my producer told me what you wanted to know. You want to know why it was taking so long. Here's how it works. Here's how it works. Every single state capital, all 50 state capitals, and in D.C., they're meeting today, and they're casting their ballots in secret, actually. We don't know who won yet. Then all those ballots are sealed, brought to the floor of Congress, and in January they will be counted on the floor of Congress. It's one of the first things Congress will do, probably around January 3rd or January 4th. And then we'll find out. If there are faithless electors, maybe they'll tell us publicly. But we won't really know until those ballots are opened in January. That answers that question.
I knew all that, but I think there's no reason why it needs to take so long.
Well, you know what? This was a system designed 230-odd years ago, and I would just abolish the whole thing, as you know, Helen. I got to get to a couple other callers, though. Thanks for your call. Nick in California, line four. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Mark. This is Jake in Eureka, actually.
Oh, Jake in Eureka.
Hey, since you brought up Jonestown and drinking the Kool-Aid, I'd like to say a couple words about Alex Jones, if I could.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes nice guys finish first. As it turns out, the radio station you appear on here in Eureka, 1480 KGOE, they used to run Alex Jones' radio show for several years, but as listeners contacted the station, said they wanted that show off the air. You know,
good for listeners. Sort of good for Eureka. Boy, I don't have to live in despair anymore. I know there's a bright light of sunshine in Eureka, California, where they got that nasty lion SOB off the air, someone who's Putin's puppet,
right.
and brought me on. You know what? There, Nick, Jake, you made my day. I got some happiness. I got to hang up, though, and quickly go to Julian in Virginia on line three. Go ahead, Julian.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, Julian.
I'm glad you're happier now.
I am.
You gave us the facts about the economy, about jobs, about the deficit and inflation, and how Obama turned the economy around.
No question.
You gave us the facts. The trouble is that Trump supporters all believe the exact opposite.
They live in a post-fact world.
They believe there's a 10% inflation rate. They believe there's 10% unemployment.
They believe Obama was born in Kenya, and they believe that that Donald Trump won the popular vote. So how do you deal with to me, it's like the people who follow Jim Jones. How do you deal with people that are drinking the Kool-Aid? And it's really hard to do. And part of what we need to do is encourage people to check out alternative forms of media. You know, I don't just watch CNN. Yep. I read the Washington Post. I look at the New York Times. I listen to radio. I read conservative. I go on Fox News. I hear the other side. If you're afraid to – here's what I would tell the conservatives – and I'm having a hard time getting through. Maybe you can, Julian. If you're afraid to hear the other side, maybe that tells you that you know you're being lied to. I think that's a good way to if you can hear the other side and refute it with facts and figures, that's great. You're an American. You're doing your best. But if you are afraid to even listen to the other side and all you can respond to is with insults and generalities and nastiness, maybe you are the problem. We'll be back tomorrow for a special show, 3 o'clock. Don't miss it. Lots more to talk about. Thank you so much, everybody, for calling in. This is Mark Levine, signing off.